also employee empowerment and assistance in self advancement. We are looking at study assistance to those employees who are willing to develop themselves further. Again, as a highlight, we look at how revenue was increased. A predominant way that showed a turnaround in the revenue of the organization was that the permit fees had to be converted from the 3 months short term or temporary permits used by the freight industry and convert them into a 12-month duration permit. This helped in making sure that the revenues are realized in that direction. Also, we are looking at an approach of changing regulation to restructure the permits. What we are talking about here is that there are too many permits in circulation within the cross-border environment, and we are looking at restructuring them to bringing them to a manageable number of 3 or 4. Our law enforcement operations are more visible. Of course, they cannot do it alone. They have to do it as joint operations with other agencies of law enforcement like the metros and the SAPS. And I think this is where the increase in prosecution for non-compliance came out. The facilitations division also assisted in this by getting more involved with operators, looking at how the operators behave, and also help them to understand why certain things within a cross-border operation have to be done in a particular way. On the next page, we have a financial overview. We have broken down this into 4 quadrants. We are pleased to show that in this current financial year, there was a 6.6% increase in revenue. Revenue increased from 30 million rand to 32 million rand, while expenses were brought down marginally. There was a 2% drop in expenses from a 34.7 million of the previous financial year to 34 million rand in this particular financial year. As we say, the agency has been troubled financially over the past period of its existence. For this current financial year, we posted a 1.8 million rand deficit, which was somehow better from the previous year of a 2.3 million rand. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we are proud to say this situation has completely been turned around. In the present financial year 2007-2008, this deficit has turned into a 4.9 million rand surplus. We are looking here at an accumulated deficit since the existence of the agency of 5.8 million rand. And once again, Mr. Chair, I can proudly say that this has been brought down to just under 600,000 rand in 2007-2008. On the next page, we are having our balance sheet. If we look at the performance of the agency in 2007 as compared to 2008, we can see that there is a big improvement, or a lot of right has been put in to correct the situation. One of the biggest problems that we have found is that the agency had more liabilities than its assets. And once again, I can say this situation is now under control. On the next page, we are having the income statement, where we can show that in 2007 compared to 2006, yes indeed, revenue was up from 30 million to 32 million. And when we look at the total expenses, we can see that the expenses have been kept marginally the same. And it is also important to realize that the biggest cost within the agency comes out of the area of personnel remuneration. That is employee cost of 22 million out of the 34 million total cost. And yes, in this particular financial year, we ended up with a deficit of 8 million compared to the 2.3 of 2006. On the next page, this is our cash flow statement, which indicates that the agency now, we cannot say it is totally out of the red, but we do now can see that we can manage to pay our debtors. There is money within the agency. But this does not mean that if nothing is done, we can continue to survive under these pressures. We need to do more to get the situation corrected. Mr. Chairman, on the next page, we are just highlighting on the report of the AG. We got a qualified report, and the basis on which the AG gave us a qualified report was one, because of the board appointment. And as we have said, the board appointment situation was corrected by the minister effective 1st of August 2007, which was after the audit was done. And this is one of the reasons why the publishing of the annual report took long. That's why it got delayed. Another issue that we had was permit income. Because the agency primarily is funded by issuance of permits, the AG was not happy that we did not highlight out of the 34 million, which is permit income. Because we put all income together to come to 34 million, and he had an issue with that. On the issue of debtors as well, some of our operators, they pay us money up front because of administrative issues within the organization. And when we looked at our debtors book, there were debtors which had a negative balance, which meant that they have more money, we owe them money. And the auditor general said he would rather have that money, not as a debtor, but as a creditor. So that's also something that our accounts department is looking at to come and report in an acceptable way to the AG. Again, as a matter of emphasis on the AG's report, was again the completeness of income. What he had an issue here with, he had an issue with all the money that was held by the courts that was not yet paid over to CBRTA. Because as an agency, when a penalty is given to an operator out there, the money is not paid direct to CBRTA. The money is either paid over to the police or paid over to a court. And the process of getting the money over from the court into CBRTA sometimes run over 120 days. And this is what the AG had a problem with. Again, we had a problem with general entries because at the end of the financial year, a very big general entry had to be raised to balance the CBRTS system and our accounting system, which is pastel. We have since overcome this by having the generals to be raised on a monthly basis rather than to wait for the whole 12-month period and find ourselves raising a general of more than half a million rands. Again, as a concern for the AG, looking at our financial standing, looking at us having more liabilities than our assets, the AG was worried that CBRTA had issues of being a going concern. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think that is what I can share with you around the agency. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Thanks, Mr. Mabuza. Okay. What I suggest we do is let's get to the AG's report. As you've done, you've divided up your current, as it were, financial statement presentation, and then at the latter part you've dealt with the AG's report. Let's do the same thing, and let's just focus briefly, because I think we would quite like to spend a little bit more time in the AG's report, but if we could look at the first two-thirds of this presentation that we've got, which takes us up to date with a number of matters. Obviously, the things are related, but let's do it like that. One question I've got is I don't understand, if you could, well, I think I understand, but if you could just explain a little bit further the moratorium on Lesotho that you raised. That's on your first substantial slide, the second slide. That's one issue. Let's just take a few issues on the first half of the presentation that other members might like to raise. I think, yeah, Lemir?
On the narrative side, I think it's page 2 of the slide. So, right from the beginning. There's an indication of 4.2% growth from the previous year. One just want to know, because CBRTA, I think, has been, so because of lack of ways, one would be saying a dormant agency. Is this 4.2 from more efficient working, or is that general growth in CBRTA business?
Obviously, the same would apply to one could also around the process. I mean, it's good to see that obviously there's an increase in permits and particularly an increase in in inspections and inspections in particular. 10.7 up and so on. But if you could just comment on that, whether it's an increase of business as it were generated, or whether it's yourself being more active, or a mixture of the two. Anything else of a general nature before we get then to the AG's report more specifically, Lemon?
Yeah, the next one I think is on the next the third slide. Set up board committees. One understands that these board committees, I'm sure they have been set up before the correct board was appointed. Now one just wants to know how legal, how legitimate are these board committees and the decisions that they have taken, and what happens with them, because it looks like a turnaround strategy actually has been approved by the board at that time, being not legitimate. Then how legitimate is this turnaround strategy we are talking about? Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To begin with the question of the Lesotho moratorium, the problem of the Lesotho moratorium has now been escalated to to DOT once more. This has happened in the meeting that we had 2 months ago, Mr. Chair, where Lesotho had elevated this problem to SACU. What has happened in that meeting is that SACU has now said the DOT should lead driving this problem of resolving the Lesotho issue. One of the biggest problems is that Lesotho felt that South Africa did not respect their sovereignty by giving an agency of South Africa under the Department of Transport to look after this problem. So to that effect, it was agreed within SACU that the DOT should now lead the process, and the process now is being led by International Affairs, and we are going to be having a bilateral with Lesotho in July to look at this problem.
Raised. Are they doing something? I mean, is there some kind of, from their side, intervention or non-recognition of permits, or is it just an issue that they're raising, verbally?
It's not non-recognition of permits. What stands out to be a problem is that free flow of passenger movement between South Africa and Lesotho is not happening as smooth as it does with our other SADC neighbors. Now, we have to look and find what is it that is creating this problem. And one of the problems that we realize, Mr. Chair, is that in Lesotho, as opposed to the other SADC countries, do not have taxi associations which communicate with South African taxi associations on a businessman to businessman. The Lesotho government is more involved in the taxi industry. And we are trying to bring them on a table to say, this is how it is done with our other SADC neighbors. If you can do it in the same manner, probably this issue is going to be resolved, and we are going to approach the minister to to uplift the moratorium. The problem that we are having now is that the relationship or the cross-border movement between Lesotho and South Africa is totally different from our other SADC counterparts.
Important. So if we can just try and understand what you're saying. In a taxi association from South Africa that wants to run cross-border passenger operations into Mozambique will, in order to get a permit, as we learned when we were last meeting around the legislation, in order to get a permit, one of the requirements would be a business plan, and part of the business plan would be some kind of agreement with counterparts, let's say in Maputo, in terms of access to ranks or arrangements of one kind or another of that sort. And you're saying in Maputo, Mozambique, that's possible because there are taxi associations which look a little bit like, for better and for worse, which look a little bit like our taxi association, so there can be a business partnership, as it were, between two entities. In Lesotho, the control of those things is much more firmly in the hands of the Lesotho government. Control of what? Things like ranks and...
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct. In Lesotho, when you go there and speak, our taxi operators were frustrated by the fact that there is no businessman structure in a form of a taxi. When they go there, they say they have to speak to individuals. An individual doesn't own a rank. A rank is owned by the government or by the whatever department within that country. So with that arrangement not being in place, it frustrates our operators. And when you look at how the Lesotho operators come into the country, is that because they too are not aware of this arrangement. When they come into South Africa, they do not have a specific agreement with a South African association to say we will offload people at Bloemfontein, we will offload people at Johannesburg. They will go wherever within the Republic because they are saying, but that is what is on the memorandum of understanding.
Maybe the Lesotho has a point, actually, because one read recently that the Gauteng province, quite correctly in my view, was saying that we need government needs to take, public authority needs to take control, for instance, of ranks. That's not to prevent partnerships between different business associations in different countries. But, I mean, for instance, access to ranks shouldn't be a matter in the hands of a South African Taxi Association or, not my job to say that, Mozambican Association. That's public space, not privately owned. I mean, some of it might be privately owned. There might be premises and things like that, garages and things like that, maintenance. But the actual ranking side of things. So, but anyhow, okay, that's a whole other debate. But I just wanted to get clarity for the moment on. But I think we need to be thinking about this ourselves, and not just assuming that from the side of Lesotho they're being officious and problematic. They might be being that as well. But I think there are weaknesses on our side of things as well in terms of the public control of public facilities and resources. Okay, so at the moment it's kind of in a grey area. There's just a moratorium, so you're not issuing cross-border permits into the city from our side. That's what a moratorium means.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are not issuing the permits between South Africa and Lesotho were stopped when this problem started. There is in existence 42 permits per country.
Right.
So those are the ones that we continue to renew. But when peaks come, like Easter and December, we do issue temporaries through concurrence. We speak to them and they agree to that and we do that.
Okay, thanks for the clarity. Sorry, I dwelt a little bit on it, but let's move on then. If that's okay, we can move on to the other issues that were raised.
The second issue was on the 4.2% growth in permits. The question that was asked was that did this growth come as natural growth or did it come through as more efficiencies? I would say it came as both. We know that there is always more people moving into South Africa and more people leaving South Africa. Therefore, you are going to have organic growth that comes naturally. But especially on the freight side, we found that this growth came because of efficiencies. And one of that was to convert the 3 months short-term permit that was held by operators to try and have them to get to the 12-month full-term permit. If I may quickly give an example, is that when you give him a 3-month permit, it means in a year he must visit you 4 times. But because they know there are loopholes in the system, especially in compliance enforcement, you will find that he will only come once, and he knows he will never be detected in the system. So by putting more efficiencies and more visible law enforcement, we managed to cut down on that and informed the operators through our facilitations department that you know that you can get a 12-month permit that is going to remove this frustration of you coming to visit us 4 times in 1 year. And we think it is actually as a result of both efficiency and organic growth. The third question was on the board committees and their legality. Mr. Chair, as the honorable member has said or noted, that because the board was not properly constituted, their decision between the date of inception, which was October 2006, and 1st of August 2007, were deemed null and void by the AG. And that was one of the bases of the qualification. But there was a way to go around that. Because when the minister retired the board after the anomaly was made public, the minister retired the board from a active or from being an accounting authority into becoming an advisory committee. Now, at the end of the period, all decisions that were made by the board and its committees retrospectively to 1st October 2006 were ratified by the minister, and this is how they obtained their legal status.
Then there's the issue that we just talked about, that the way it was resolved was then that the board acted as an advisory entity rather than an accounting entity. But the AG said it didn't always, it kind of strayed beyond that advisory mandate and failed to refer. That's now a little bit in the past because now it's a properly constituted board. So there's no remedial issues immediately required in that respect. So can we move along that? But just note that there were some mistakes made. Okay. Then it's the permit income stuff. Okay. Now, in some of your reports, when you're reporting back to us, it's basically saying that the control weaknesses over the whole permit process, that your core business basically is issuing permits. And the AG has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at least bullet points here, all of a similar kind, which is the processes, the IT capacity, change control, the contract with the service provider, user account management procedures, and so on. Now, maybe what we should do, because you were a little bit general when dealing with these points, maybe if we can get you to specifically say how each one of these bullet points have been addressed or are being addressed, is being addressed. So, a comprehensive information technology policy, standards and procedures did not exist. Users therefore had no rules or procedures to follow to prevent errors, fraud, and the loss of data, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So let's just dwell on that one briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The whole thing around the CBRTA system, or CBRTS system as we call it, it is outsourced to an outside service provider. And a lot of control around the management of the system lies with the service provider. And which is what, again, when you see that there is some shortcomings of the contract with the service provider, this stems from the problem of saying we know that the sickness within the agency was the turnover of CEOs. This agency is in its 10th year, and we just appointed our 6th CEO. So there has been this lack of continuity. The service provider has been brought in after the audit was done, and the service provider was told that this is how we want to take this, the relationship forward. We want to own the contract. It cannot be on your side. And I think through that, it will also address some of these bullet points, because now we have to stipulate to the service provider what is it that we expect as a client, what is it that we expect from him as a change management policy. We will say to him what must be done around the recoverability and the protection of data. Issues like fraud prevention, Mr. Chair, that is an in-house responsibility of the executive management. And the shortcomings there came out of this high turnover of top leadership. I think...
in a word, what you're saying, I agree with you that insofar as the service is going to be outsourced, and you're saying it has to be because you don't have that capacity, then the heart of the matter is in the contract. Absolutely. And your control over the contract rather than the outsourced entity, as it were, running, dominating the terms and character of the contract. So that's fine. I think that's right. And I think all of these matters that are the bullet points that the AG's got here are all clustered around that core issue. So I'm certainly in agreement with that. But when you're talking about how you're addressing that, it sounds like it's in the continuous tense, if you know what I mean. In other words, you've not... But am I right or wrong? In other words, is it ongoing? That's what I'm asking. The question is, what tense is the verb in? This is what we've done, or this is what we are going to be doing? It's the latter.
Mr. Chairman, yes, you are right. It's the tensing. We have recalled the contract. We have spoken to the service provider. What is happening now is that the process of doing all this is ongoing, but the contract now is under the control of the agency.
It's work in process. It will remain the same entity to which you've withdrawn the old contract, and you're renegotiating or redetermining a new contract, but with basically the same service provider. So there's continuity of provision, even though there's still a bit of uncertainty around the contract. Oh, okay. But that's, I mean, I'm not unduly worried. I mean, obviously it's something that needs to be sorted out as quickly as possible, but not so fast that you don't think very carefully through the contract, because I agree with what you were saying earlier. That to get that right is absolutely the key to the matter. How long are the contracts for? And what enabled you to withdraw the contract, the old one? Presumably because the contract was running longer than...
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure of the contract, because the service provider is the person who helped set up the system 11 years ago. When the agency started, it started with him, and he happens to be the same people who did the old native system. So they are people who are au fait with the functioning of the transport industry within the Department of Transport. I can also inform the members of the committee that we are now looking at whether this system is relevant to the agency after the agency has been in existence for 10 years. And more studies and more information will come as to saying, do we still keep the system, or we look for something new and a new age in the market?
I just want to check one thing. The system has been there for 11 years. And the COO, said COO, when he started to report, he said, he was saying it's a turnaround strategy. He said to us earlier on, he said things have changed. But if you look into some of these things that you are raising, you have just raised now, it seems nothing has been started. Now, my question is, since this system is not working, in terms of bullet point 1 until 5, it shows you clearly that the system is failing after 11 years. Why they want to continue with this system, Chair? I just want to check. Because earlier on he said they have turnaround. Now still they want to continue with that system. Why? Why that should happen?
Honorable member, through you, Mr. Chair, to answer that question is to say the turnaround of the agency was not only focused on one aspect of the agency. It was a whole minefield of issues to be sorted out within the agency. And one of them that we have managed to mention is the visibility of law enforcement, is the increase in the number of permits to compliance. It is the more involvement of our facilitation department with other relevant forums within SADC. The CBRTS system is very important, and as you say, it has been there for so long, and I myself, a COO, I joined the agency in March of last year. The CEO has joined the agency in April of 2008, so it is not going to be wise just to go in and change the system just like that. So even the COO, as I'm saying, he is in the process of questioning the relevance of this system after, as we say, it has failed us for such a long period of time. And to put it in context, I do not want to describe it as it has failed us. I would say for 10 years with the same system, with no upgrade, with no add-ons on the system, surely it must have outlived itself by a date time. So we have now a person who's going to lead the process of seeing what is the relevant system for CBRTA in 2008 going forward.
Yeah, Chase, it's really confusing. Well, like earlier on when you said the Office of Auditor General is there, it is always there. My thinking was that I think they must get somebody from department. I don't know exactly, because each entity has a person who's responsible in the department to assist them with this thing. Because really, Chair, if you read all these things, it tells you that that system is not working. I don't know how does the system work, but it tells you that that service provider is failing.
I think there's not necessarily a disagreement between what you're saying and what Mr. Mabuza is saying. As long as we understand that there are possibly two dimensions to it, not one. So an upgrade, an IT improvement and so on may well be what's required, and one would suspect that in an area which moves fast and quickly, and 11 years is a long time with a particular IT system. But it's also in the contract and the control that the CBRTA needs to exert over that contract, so that the service provider isn't running off with the process, which they'll do, understandably. They're going to cut and trim it according to what works for them and what they can do cheaply.
Exciting. Just to make follow-up, I just want to check. You said you arrived there last year in March. That contract, how long is what period? The lifespan of that period of, for an example, when you sign the contract, you are saying 3 years. After 3 years, the contract will be renewed or the contract will be tendered again. How long is that contract, the one that you are having now, of the service provider, the current one that you are saying it has been there for 11 years? What is the lifespan that's supposed to spend?
I did ask the question as well. They weren't sure. I think that's what you said, weren't sure.
But Chair, COO, on a very serious note, COO, Chief Operating Officer, who started last year in March, at least surely by June 2008, at least the COO must know the contract, what are the lifespan of that contract.
As I understand, they've withdrawn the contract.
They haven't withdrawn the contract.
Mr. Chair, as I have said earlier, I am not sure as to what was the lifespan of the contract when it was signed at inception. And I undertake to go back and to find exactly what was the lifespan of the contract. No, we haven't.
Still in operation, but you're renegotiating the contract.
Yes.
Okay. And I suppose, therefore, the key issue then becomes, what kind of lifespan are you looking at for a refreshed or renewed contract? And maybe you haven't got an answer yet, because that's also under negotiation, but what kind of time span are you looking at?
Maybe we might not know. You see, he said
for the past 11 years, that contract has been there. Maybe that contract is going to expire the time when Jesus Christ comes. Really. Because if it has been there for 11 years, I don't see it going away, Chair.
No, but I mean, for instance, in other words, if the AG, for instance, is finding serious problems with the contract, that itself presumably is ground for a serious renegotiation. So I don't think we should be too hung up about that. whatever was signed 11 years ago or something, it's, I mean, I think that there must be plenty of grounds for pulling the plug on it. You shouldn't, I agree that you shouldn't pull the plug until you can't just pull the plug and then have nothing. So we've got to, but it is a, but clearly now it's a matter of urgency. That's because these are serious findings, very serious findings, which relate to the system and therefore to the contract. And we are hopefully, the key thing that we're wanting to impress on you now is a sense of urgency to do it well and not rush it so that you do badly. But really it needs to be, something needs to be done quite urgently nonetheless. Lemis?
Yeah, Chair, you know, it's in support of the argument that Comrade Morales raised. I think the chief operations officer should know the environment in which he's working. And one would, you see, be surprised what informs the renegotiation. Because surely the renegotiations should be based on knowing that the contract is still going to take long, and but it is not giving us what we want. Then we negotiate the terms. But if it is expiring next year, or it's expiring within the next 6 months, I mean, why renegotiate? It should be actually be putting together other new tendering, which they may be ready to re-tender. But now the question is, what informs these negotiations if we hardly know when the contract is going to expire? And surely it should be requested to know the environment in which it's operating, and knowing the time for the contracts that are in place within the institution, I think that is part of something that you should be knowing better. Thank you.
On that note, I think the message has got across very clearly, which is, yeah, because what Lemis is saying is absolutely right. I mean, it might be a complete re-tendering that is the appropriate thing. And therefore, quite a lot does hinge on the terms of the old contract and the length of period and duration of it. So I think that but you've undertaken to go back to check, have a good look at that old contract if it exists. That might be another problem. And to quite rapidly then design a turnaround strategy in regard to this matter.
Yes. Let's qualify that in terms of our responsibility, PFMA, our responsibility is to look after the assets of the public. Now, can I request that you must put a time frame in which you will be coming back to us to come and report on this matter?
In early August. Okay, so a month, well, just over a month. Okay.
Yeah, but Chair, there is nothing that will stop CBRTA. You know, it's after picking up what we're talking about and putting up a piece of paper directed to the committee on yourself.
Yes, yes.
And that's indicating the true fact, and I don't think it will be a problem. And based on that,
okay,
we may determine whether we need to speak to them.
Yes, no, I agree. It doesn't necessarily involve coming to Cape Town, yeah.
Or
okay. So in a sense, what we're asking is for two things. The one is, if you could give us just a written memo on the existing contract and whether it's expiring, et cetera, et cetera. And then perhaps within, by early August, a further written memo, earlier if better, but at least by the first week of August. If you could then provide us with again, a second memorandum just saying, how you are beginning, how you're developing thoughts on this matter, hopefully finalizing thoughts on this matter are proceeding. I think that we'd appreciate that. And then we can see whether it would be desirable to have a face-to-face meeting like this or whether we're satisfied that progress has been made. Thanks to Lemis and Offensive. I think we've helped on that front. Okay. Can we move along to the next set of points? Okay, the next one is the debtors issue. That strikes me as being a slightly technical matter, i.e. The Auditor General were saying that you're listing them as debtors, but they should really be creditors because, and what you were saying to us is they've deposited money up front. Why would anyone do that? That's a matter of interest, but I mean, it's nice that they do it, but why would they do it?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's a very interesting way they operate. Our operators, our customers. Let's take, for instance, an organization like Unitrans on their buses side. They've got all these buses going cross-border. But a permit for a bus is only 1,400. And within the system of their administration, they are saying if we go and apply for a 1,400 check to pay for a permit, it might take very long. So what they do is that they apply for all the buses that they know can, the permits are going to expire in the near future. And they would take that money and deposit it. And as they come and apply, they say, I am in credit. So take for two permits out of the 20,000 that I've given you. Out of, this is how the money is happened to have been in advance.
Okay, I think that's okay. It's just a question of how you enter debt into your books as creditors rather than those amounts. Okay, can we pass it on up? I mean, it might suggest that the system isn't working very well for them. But if they're not complaining and they're putting the money in, then let's not dwell too much on that one. Then, if we can go, then skip over to the emphasis of matter, because those were the three issues that led to the qualification. But then there are also emphasis of matter. The next one, then, the first emphasis of matter is the fine. And I understand that that is, I can understand that's complicated. So on your behalf, a court or a magistrate's court or something like that exacts a fine, but it takes 120 days, more than 120 days on occasion for that fine to find its way into your books. Is there anything that can be done about that?
Mr. Chair, yes, there is something that can be done about it. It is a relationship that needs to be built with the court in the area where we are. The only problem that we are having is that it is not only on the side of issuing money into CBRTA. We've had in the recent past issues about maintenance money that could not reach the bona fide recipients. So this is a bigger problem than a CBRTA issue. And the board has said we need to get closer to the management of the courts. The CEO and I are going to be seeing especially the Pretoria Court, because we find that this is where the biggest anomaly comes from. But in the process of doing that, we do not want to find ourselves alienating CBRTA from the system. Because if we do that and they say, okay, fine, we cannot do it, problem is a problem. You will wait like any other person, and we're going to find ourselves waiting a year or one. We don't want that environment.
Which I understood originally in any case. Can we move beyond that one? That one? The fine, you know, yeah.
Chair, what I just wanted to check on that one, because you have made reference to 120 days, but I just want to check whether, from CBRTA's point of view, are they not experiencing anything like fines not making their way to their coffers for more than a year? Because I'm actually worried about number 17 on internal control weaknesses and also on your accounting practices. If certain fines fail to make its way to your coffers for over a year, what happens? How do you deal with that?
Mr. Chair, that's a very interesting question and observation. But yes, we can find a situation like that. But the accounting process of any business, if for some reason or the other, we cannot recover a certain amount of a fine, let's say 2,000 rand of a fine goes astray in the system, and it has come to the reporting, surely we have to demonstrate to the board that we have not been able or successful to get that money, and because of these and those reasons. And we may be allowed to write off depending on the materiality of the loss of that money. But that is not a big issue, because had it been a big issue, the Auditor General would have picked it up and he would have said, this is what I see and I am not happy about it. I would not say totally it doesn't happen. Surely it does happen that a fine in Upington comes the year that money hasn't come in, but the materiality is what will guide us in our reporting at the end of the financial year.
Chair, the question that I was asking, it's actually in relation with that paragraph 13, especially the last sentence. I'm actually referring, not necessarily that the money is in the account and it is lost, but I'm just talking about a fine that has been issued, but then the courts do not process, or the money don't find its way to your account, either due to the court or whatever, for over 365 days. That's what I was just checking, whether up to now you have experienced such similar incidences. Because in here, I think the Auditor General has just raised money outstanding longer than 120 days, which is something around 6 months or 5 months. Now I wanted to check whether you have got fines issued, but the courts have not processed and the money has not reached your account for more than 365 days.
Journal entries, I think you told us there you've addressed the matter, you know, is that correct, a correct understanding? More frequent attention to the matter, rather than year-end attempts to, was that a correct understanding of what you were saying? Can we move beyond that? Going concern, I think that's also straightforward. The Auditor General saying you're not quite, you've got...
Journal entry was entered at the end of the financial year.
Yes.
So to correct this situation, we said no, this journal entry should be done on a monthly basis. So you will have supporting documents to do that.
Going concern, I think that's straightforward. I mean, it's a challenge, but it's straightforward. In other words, you're improving your thing. There's still the accumulated debt, but you're eating into it. And the way it's going this year, it's looking as though quite soon, if the trend continues, that you'll be out of the woods and there won't be a paragraph 15 in the Auditor General's report. Okay, can we leave that one? Okay, late submission of financial statements.
Mr. Chair, the financial statements were submitted on time. Unfortunately, the accounting authority was not properly constituted. So this is what came to say they were submitted late, because the one that the Auditor General accepted was in after the 1st of August, when the Minister had appointed the accounting authority.
Control weaknesses. Is there anything more that we want to raise that we haven't? You're assuring us that you are addressing those matters. Reconciliations relating to asset stock and debtors were not prepared, no performance agreements, quite interesting, quite important, and so on. All of that being addressed by the committees.
Yes, that has been addressed by the setting up of the committees, because those committees are to look especially after governance issues.
Okay. Yes, Lemons, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to not spend too long here, but...
Yeah, so but then on 16, the 16 years, the late submission of financial statements, the CEO is saying that they were submitted in time. Submitted by who to whom? I think it is a little bit important, Chair, because... one was expecting that the administration will submit these financial statements to its board, and the board then after approving it, is then that whether they go to the Auditor General. What was the sequence here? Thanks.
Mr. Chair, the financials were submitted by the board, but because of the circumstances of this board, the AG did not recognize them as at that time.
And you were accusing them of going too fast. Do you want to raise some matters under 17?
Can I also say that I, under 12, these four bullet points, they are very worrying. Worrying in the sense that under 17, there are about four bullet points. The internal control in this entity case, like it has a problem, or somebody who deals with finances. Do you have a CFO? Do you have an internal audit? You have an audit committee. You have all these things. But still there are problems there. Very serious problem. And all these people, except the board is gone. There's a new board. The CEO is gone. There's a new CEO. But all these things, they point to the people who are currently there. How are these things going to be solved? Because those people are still there. They are still there, the people who must take responsibility of these things. That Auditor General is raising. How are they going to be solved?
Okay, let's just get a sense of how you're approaching these matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what the Honourable Member has voiced out is very big concerns, and it was not an easy task for myself within the short period of time to function in an organisation that did not have these things in place. The way forward going is that people are going to be appointed in the correct places. You have noticed that as a subsequent event at the bottom of the page there was an issue with the CFO. Where do you place accountability of financial matters when there is no CFO? These are the challenges that we had to take the organization through. And also we had the issue of the board not having been properly constituted, could not make certain decisions during the financial year. But I think the people within the agency, from as low as the CEO up to the cleaner, we have to cut them some slack there, that under dwindling leadership, they managed to turn this agency around, especially on the financial side. Waste was cut out, and all these things we have to understand, that we needed board support and we needed the correct people placed in the right position to take the agency forward. And as I'm assuring you that these positions are now being filled and this is not going to be an issue going forward.
I just follow up. Whether the CEO says they have a new CFO, they have dealt with the CEO, because I can relate a very bad issue that has happened in information sector. I also serve in labor. Now I just want to check whether is this CFO still there or you've got a new one.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump to 21 because that's in a sense what we're doing. Because the way the Auditor General reports it here is very coy and shy. One suspects there's some horrible things that lie behind the six lines here, seven lines. But could we just have a slightly more blunt explanation of what's being said here under 21, and then we'll come back to these key points under 17.
Mr. Chair, the issue of our CFO, the CFO of the year preceding this, the former CFO was asked to leave. I think he left around January 2007. Then a new CFO was put in place. And this CFO is the one that came with these issues from the ICET CETA. And the Auditor General came to know about this information. And when he knew about it, and he brought it to the attention of the board and myself. And what we did is that we went through the process of investigation, disciplinary hearing, and he was subsequently dismissed. Now, as it is now, he was dismissed in December. As it is now, we are looking to fill this position. What has happened now is that we have a consultant accountant who is helping us with our accounts, because getting a fit and proper person to take over our financial department, we cannot just continue and make the same mistake that was done with the incumbent that is in question now. But now we have a financial manager who is doing the day-to-day number crunching, and we have a consultant, caretaker, person who is looking after our financials to guide us through until such time we have attracted a fit and proper person as CFO.
The follow-up that I want to make, I just want to check whether you are saying this person was dismissed in December 2007? Was it dismissed or was just being put away, given, what is it called, handshake, lump sum of money and say, okay, no, thanks, hamburger. Was that happened?
Yeah, actually, I was getting confused because I thought that what I was hearing is that there was a CFO and then there were problems, and then they fired him, and then they got somebody else who actually unearthed information about this particular sitter. I thought I heard like that, but now when I hear that the firing only happened after some disciplinary hearing, and then I got confused, yes.
Matthew, we talk about two CFOs. There's a CFO that went in 2006 or whatever, and then a new one was appointed in January 2007. The new one that was appointed in January 2007 had been in the CETA, and something had occurred in the CETA, which we don't know about, but clearly something murky and problematic. Hopefully unbeknown to the CBRTA, they appointed this as the new CFO, who's coming with some stumbling in the past, recent past, from the CETA. The Auditor General draws attention to what, the Auditor General became aware of the CETA issue, presumably then also drew attention to this, and then the second CFO was then dismissed in December. So that's the scenario. Now, we don't have a CFO. Its position is contracted out, and so while they look for a fit and proper person, okay. Hopefully not from a CETA. I withdraw that comment. Okay. So let's answer specific. So I've got it right, yeah? Offense's specific question is, on what terms was the CEO fired, dismissed, or whatever in December of last year?
He was basically dismissed for being dishonest. A person in his capacity should know that if he had a mark on his name, especially within a government institution, he should not have come forward to work for another government institution. And we also discovered that he did not disclose in his CV, I sat a CETA as his previous employer. And on the issue of him being given a handshake, no, we did not do that. We dismissed him from our employment effective 4th of December, and all his emoluments were stopped henceforth.
Which has raised a bigger question than CBRTA. That, I mean, there's this problem of people drifting from one failure to another, and we're not picking it up within the public service adequately. And, yeah.
Earlier on, the COO talks about the consultancy work that has been done by another person, financial person who's there. In your page, in your annual report, page 39, I just want to check whether the previous CEO was using consultants. No, the previous, both of them, whether CEO and CFO, they were using consultancies. And for what reason? If you look into the amount of money that was spent, What consultancy was exactly that for? Because I don't want to go back to the issue of CFO again, but I just want to check what this consultancy fees was it all about?
Mr. Chair, which page is the honorable member talking about?
Page 39 in your financial report, annual financial report. Consultancy fees, operating in brackets deficit for the year under review.
that what you're referring to?
816 and 2.4.
That was in the previous year?
Yeah.
2.5 million
yeah.
In 2006, 2007, 816,000. Presume it's numbers of things, but fundamentally? Are you able to break it down a bit?
But can I also request that if the COO doesn't have an answer now, can you come back to the committee in writing 28 exactly what this amount was used for?
Okay, let's do that, because let's deal with 18. I think 21 in general we've got a response, although obviously the issue that the Defence is now raising, which is in order to deal with the fact that you don't have a CSO, you've got to then spend money on a consultancy while you try to find a fit and proper person, which is not easy. We appreciate that. It's not necessarily an easy thing. And again, you need to move quickly, but you don't want to move so quickly that you just repeat another set of problems of the same kind. So can we agree? We're saying that by August, we would appreciate some kind of memo from your side, response from our side, one which has covered the issues that we've already talked about. But then secondly, arising from 18 are two kinds of things. Okay. The one is around the proper allocation of positions and jobs, clear job mandate, and then performance requirements in terms of the staff. Okay. That's what's coming up there. So I'm a bit lost myself. Sorry, it's 17. Sorry, not 18, 17. Okay. So there's proper reconciliation and documentation of stocks, assets, debtors, and so on. That's bullet point 1 under 17, and bullet point 3 of a similar kind, disposal of assets and so on. And bullets point 2 and 4 relate really to the effective management of personnel. And can, okay, and I assume that we can also qualify the Auditor General's qualified report by saying that in bullet point 3, when he says supporting documentation for the disposal of assets could be found, he meant to say could not be found. And there we find him in material, whatever, find a serious fault in his agency report. Forgot to put the not in, okay. But we won't qualify him on that. Okay, but he meant not, I'm sure. He or she meant. Okay. You're happy that we can also score some points against him? Yeah, okay. Okay, so what we're requesting is, rather than to try and get too much detail now, and clearly what we're looking for is reassurance, not that you've miraculously solved all problems, but that you agree that these are serious issues and these are the steps that you're undertaking. I mean, that's the spirit within which, in general, we're asking these questions. It's not in order to lambaste you for the sake of it, but it's to say these are very serious matters that are being raised by the, quite correctly, by the Auditor General, and some of them are not easily resolved, but we do want a sense of application and focus and a sense of progress. So that's why we would want to stay in contact. Okay. There's a thing about the possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is on 18. Sorry, on 18, it's really to do with that problem of the board. They're consequential things, if I'm understanding you correctly, the things that are raised under 18. There's a material non-compliance with applicable legislation, because the board was not a properly constituted board, and then a number of other things. The sort of thing that Lemis was raising earlier. But the trouble is that once one thing goes wrong, then a number of other things follow, which might not be hugely problematic, but they result in a non-compliance with legislation. So can we skip over that, if that's a correct understanding of those things? Those aren't, just follow consequentially. Just if we could have a brief explanation on 20, what's happening there under 20, which is a possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which has to do with refurbishment, and $262,000 paid to a service provider for the development of financial and procurement policy. Is there any sort of follow-up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the issue of the 262 for policies, these are policies which were prepared by an individual or by a consultancy. I think also this is the money that goes into the 816, but when I give a comprehensive, it will refer to that. The thing is, by the time the board that was in existence then, the board that retired in 2006 did not approve those policies. The board left office before signing off the policies. The new board is signing off the policies, but not just willy-nilly. We are going through them, and I think the audit committee and the HR committee have gone through what is pertinent to them. But there are others that we are still going through, and we say, but is this still relevant? Can't we tweak this? Can't we change this?
That, since that also work in progress, could we add it to the now growing list of what we, by the first week of August, we're asking for? Progress report on this front as well. We'd appreciate that. Okay, we start with 21. Can we, for the time being, you know, obviously once, and we'll keep following this through the communication which you've promised to give us. Can we then leave this here at this point, unless members want to raise further matters? Okay. Can we finish the CDRT? Please do.
Chair, in a turnaround strategy, the CEO presents a slide that says they want to be in a three DOT agencies. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, but you remember, Chair, what we said to the time when we engaged with SARCC. We said to them, when they come to us, they must tell us the truth so that we must be able to assist them. And I can tell you now that SARCC, I'm sure it's number one or number two, but actually it's leading. They don't have a qualified report. They don't have matters of emphasis. They don't have all these things because they were telling us the truth. Now, if you come to us and hide in some stuff, we won't be able to assist you, and you'll be in the bottomless entity. That's the first point that I want to raise. But Chair, the second point, the person who must be responsible for all these things that you are raising today is a CEO. This new CEO has been appointed. Where is he or she? Where is the CEO? Because we did not even hear the apology. I'm sorry if you have raised it. Maybe I was dozing, but I have opened my eyes since I got into this meeting. We have never heard about the whereabouts of the CEO. Where is the person?
Said that they had revised down their expectations. So it's good to have good expectations. So maybe they should try to be top six and emulate the taxi association or whatever. But yeah, it's less of competition with entities and more let's get it right. Let's get it right. The question about the CEO.
Mr. Chair, my apologies on that. It's an oversight on my part. We only got to know about today's proceedings on Friday, and the CEO is sitting for his UNISTA master's examination today, which they could not release him, and that is why I had to come on my own. Once again, I apologize for that.
That's offensive to students, so he knows about these things. He also disappears sometimes when we need him. But the point he's making is correct. Not that he should have abandoned his UNISA exam, which is fine, but that obviously it's the CEO that finally must be responsible, and therefore the letter that we're asking should come to us from the CEO, obviously, so that we're making that point. And you will obviously help us facilitate. I thought Afente was going to say the department and not just the CEO, because I think also, obviously, and Maurice is well aware of this, but in a sense the buck also stops with the department. And I agree with you. I think that truth helps. I think we are getting a more truthful picture, and truth is not always pretty, but rather have the truth than a sort of bland report which actually covers up. So I think my own view, having sat with CBRT over now 9 years, is that there are distinct improvements, and I think that this and part of the improvements are starting to see some of the warts and problems and difficulties. So we're here to encourage you, but also to obviously keep the pressure on, and it's our responsibility to do that. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming at very late notice. You politely made the point that you only heard on Friday, so we appreciate that you did come. And it was late. We also only, obviously, because the whole thing was delayed, we only got to see it ourselves last week, I think, was when we first got to see this, and we realized that no, there are some quite serious matters, and we should get to see each other. Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you. Okay. And I apologize to our colleagues who were here for the Succession Act for taking that time, but as I think you would have heard, it was important for us to spend some time. Yeah, I know, but I don't like to keep people, and particularly they have to get up very early this morning in order to get here. So they're all both CBRT and our colleagues from the department to get up very early, so apologies for that. And then we kept you waiting. Sorry. Okay. So let's move on then. Let's just get our papers in order. And it's really nice to just get an update of what we sent you away with by way of things that we felt needed to be done when we last met. And then we're also aware of further communication from Transnet via public enterprises in regard to the pension fund matter. So could you maybe just take us through where we're at and where we got to last time?
Thank you, Chair. I think there were three critical areas that were raised at the previous engagement with the portfolio committee that needed to be addressed. One was the issue in the explanatory memorandum with regard to financial implications, which has been included now. The second issue, and probably one of the most critical issues, was the issue of the date. And then the committee suggested the date of the 31st of March 2009, and at the closing of that meeting also requested that we clear the date issue with our principals, which we've done, and they're happy with the date of 31st of March. And a third issue that was raised was the issue of the name. And then, besides that, further issues were cleaning up the bill. I think there has been some errors in the bill that were raised, and those have been incorporated. In the light of that, Chair, then there was the issue that was raised by DPE in terms of an amendment to or tabling an amendment with regard to the medical aid, the Transmed issue. And the reason for that, that was put forward at that point in time and is now supported by a letter that they sent to DPE. In the process of these transactions, it would then ensure that staff moving from the falls of Chisholoza Mail, Transnet, and Autopet, not to have a break in the medical aid issue, and as a result of that, this amendment then becomes crucial and assists the transaction in a way. Chair, what has happened is the proposed amendments that were tabled addresses the issues with regard to the proposed clause 25A as was agreed to, which includes the date, as well as Chair, then going through the document that we just called 17 June 2008, that gives effect to all the amendments that the portfolio committee supported with changes have been incorporated into the 17 June document. So. In the explanatory memorandum,
Thank you. aspect of the financial implications here?
To which they are assuring us, oh,
yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
That's okay, that's all in order.
Yes.
From in terms of procedural. And obviously it was important. What Farah had pointed out was obviously important to do because it's a more accurate portrayal of the reality. So in both cases, under 4.1 and 4.2, it has the same formula that the balance of the funding will be motivated in alignment with the business and consolidation implementation plans and so forth for long distance passenger rail, for long distance passenger road services. Okay, during the 2009-2010 MTF budget cycle. So that's the formula basically to indicate that there will be an application for a funding allocation to make all this possible. Okay? So we don't need to look at the detailed wording because it's not part of the legislation unless members want to particularly stick on that. Okay? Yes, Maxwell. We can hear you properly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Chair, I just need to check something. This that we inherit now from Transnet, the debts that we inherit, right? Say the losses, okay, and the profits. Can you give me a figure on that event? Well, what are we inheriting from Transnet?
I'll refer back to the shortfall issues with Chosholoza Mail in particular. The operational deficit for the 2006-07 financial year was 735 million rand. It's in the explanation. Then there's also. In the light of that, there's also capital, the operational shortfall for the current financial year is also estimated at 735 million. But there's also there's also short-term capital requirements, which is 422 in the current financial year, and it escalates in the next financial year to 892. The issue. And the point I'd like to get to, Chair, is that in Treasury's allocation of this, they provided some funding in the form of 500 million in the current financial year, 450 million in the next financial year, and 400 million in the last financial year, being 10-11. Now, in the light of that, there's obviously a shortfall in that funding. And with the business plan having been approved by the SARCC board, that would be the motivation to Treasury to fund the balance.
Actually, the chair, it means that Clause 25A then also covers these shortfalls and losses. I mean, 25A that has been submitted now for. Yes. I'm just checking that the spirit of this particular clause also says that those losses are being transferred together with the assets.
I think just a point on the issue of the date in Clause 25A. Is that the transaction in terms of the PFMA, if the National Treasury doesn't finance the difference, then the transaction cannot take place.
And we've done that. Then, if we go to the amendment proposals, the 17th of June document, then we pick up on the other matters.
I see. Or most of the other matters. Okay.
So maybe just take us through quick.
Chair, I'll start with the repeal of Section 15. The committee agreed at the last session that the fact that Transnet is out of, is moving out of passenger services, be it rail or road, that the need for Section 15 no longer is no longer required for Section 15 to be in place, because it addresses the issue of the company shall provide services at the request of a transport Chair, we close one. Repeal of Section 15. Okay. Then Chair, the other aspect is the replacement of the previous Clause 25A with the new Clause 25A, which firstly addresses the issue of the date, and secondly there's the issue of the liabilities, rights and obligations, and the assets, which moves away from previously the two ministers deciding which assets, and now this would become part of the negotiating process in terms of the acquisition of the businesses from Transnet between the parties, that being SARCC and Transnet. Then the other aspect, which was also debated previously, was the issue of fast-tracking or looking at a fast-track system in terms of the transfer of certain immovable properties, which may be subject to subdivisions and so on, and to shorten that process so that those assets can be transferred. And that is 25A3.
So that we, notwithstanding anything to the contrary in any other law contained, the company is exempted from applying to the relevant authority for the approval of any subdivision of land necessary in order to effect the transfer contemplated in subsection 1. Has it changed from when we last looked at it?
No, Chair, it hasn't changed. The state law advisor was
wanted to check,
was to confirm whether it's possible to be included.
Chair, the only thing that I did was laws were listed, or types of law was listed, were listed. If you look at the Interpretation Act, has a definition of law, and that is a complete definition.
So you just cut out all
it's better to use that, because there's a presumption that what you've excluded is not included.
Yes, exactly. So you just say law, any law, and then that can cover any kind of, a whole range of things. Okay, so that's what's changed, but otherwise everything else is the same.
Yes, sir. Chair, just one thing. I'm sorry, I had to do this morning really early, and I didn't have the electronic version. In paragraph B, the provisor, there's in the 1, 2, 3, the fourth line, there's a word left out. The authority may have received regarding the proposed. The word received is left out after has.
Writing within 30-day working days from the receipt of the notice, refer to him of any objection or comment the authority may have received regarding. Okay.
And also one last thing, changed the 30 days to 30 working days as per.
Thank you, yes, that's right. That was suggested. Okay. So nothing major there.
And then, Chair, the last item in this document is the amendment of Section 33, which is a consequential amendment as a result of 25A3B. Of 25A3 in terms of the deeds registered.
Now, apart from the pension thing, which we'll still get to, those are the matters that we had discussed last time. We're not about to decide finally now, but can we just see if there's any problems from that, any issues there, man?
Chair, I'm calling you on this particular matter, Chair. It's issue of exemption. One knows that, you know, in the past, South African, whatever railways, whatever it was called, it was a very big institution and a powerful institution in the country under apartheid. And one would understand why, you know, it's, it amassed a lot of power, exemptions and the rest. Now that we are in a constitutional democracy, and this exemption, as far as I'm concerned, it tends to undermine local authorities. And surely we should, one will request if maybe SALGA should be consulted. Because I'm just seeing a clause that gives this particular entity to continue to undermine local authorities. And we should check that, you know, because things have changed since apartheid. And, you know, where you had the railways of Spoornet or whatever it was called, having amassed a lot of power to do things as they wished, and for now to normalize things. And because I was just checking under this the consultation as well, it is not really clear that SALGA has been consulted other than just a publication. And that's the one thing. The other thing I just wanted to check as well is, given these financial implications, because there is nothing extra written here that expresses that this kind of finances will be available other than talking about the coming business plan, are we going to be in order, you know, passing this kind of legislation with such huge finances without having clarity whether the business plan is being approved or whatever, and plunge the receiving or the new entity into debt right at the beginning, and without clarity. So I wouldn't know, Chair. Maybe I stand to be advised on this kind of matter. Thanks.
Tuan, I think you've consistently raised the point, and maybe that's again a study group issue that we should decide where we come down as the ANC. Yes, Dr. Sefolor, on that one.
Thank you very much, Chair. I thought we had to resolve this point last week because it leads to subsection 1. It's only limited to the transfer of long-distance passenger services and long-distance. It's almost an internal transfer. I thought we had gone at length to make sense of that apparent exemption. I don't know whether, as a whip, I want to take it back to the committee, because we really did resolve this point. I'm stating this also just as a reminder to my colleague to say this is the context in which this was discussed. It's not exemption from all other laws that require the authority or jurisdiction of local authorities.
Okay. Then the second matter, which is really what I was asking a little bit before, is it okay to proceed, as it were, with legislation which has financial implications, which depends upon the business plan, as it were, meeting approval from the relevant authorities, not least Treasury. And what we were told is that the whole transfer can't go ahead in any case unless there is, PFMA requires such approval. So our job is not to scrutinize the business plan, but to say what is desirable from a transport perspective, and what is desirable is that this transfer occurs, obviously with the best tank possible and the best business plan possible. What we are legislating for is for a transfer of the public transport functions out of Transnet into this new entity, and that's in line with our policy and indeed with cabinet policy. Which might make it good or bad, but that's certainly in line with our position. So I think that's the point, okay? Have I got it right? Okay. In other words, what we're legislating for might not happen if the business plan isn't up to scratch. What we're doing is empowering that for it to happen, but if the business plan isn't up to scratch, the Treasury won't allocate the money, or Cabinet won't allocate the money, and it won't be able to be implemented. So, and that's correct. I mean, in other words, it's correct that we shouldn't whimsically allocate budget money. Our job is to facilitate a process from a transport perspective. Other people's job is to draw up decent business plans and then to finance them if they're decent business plans in line with board policy. Okay? Because so, your second question was, can we go ahead given that we don't know? Well, yes, we must go ahead. And that also then adds pressure both on the business planning side of things and on the treasury side of things. What we're doing is creating the space for the strategy to be implemented. Legal space. Okay. Okay, can we then... I think generally, apart from maybe, you know, some hesitation here or there, we're happy with where we've got to on all of these fronts. The 31st of March issue is one we favoured when we concluded last time. We're all aware that there's a danger there. But, okay, it's more pressure on the thing, and that's the key thing. We're saying let's get this thing moving quickly. Dr. Sevlar?
No, thanks, Chair. I agree we seem to have covered all the key issues. I just want to understand what is our response to this letter?
To the Transnet issue. Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment, yeah. Say, Lord Nazi.
Thank you, Chair. To my detriment, Chair, I'm just have to raise one point in Clause 3 of the bill. The object and powers of corporation in subsection 1 of the Clause 23, there is a mistake made by me in the haste to correct. I refer to a local government body, and that is this bill is deleting that definition, so I'll have to just propose an amendment to correct that mistake if it is okay with the committee.
Fine. Just explain to us what it is that without necessarily the exact words, ensure that at the request of the Department of Transport or any local government body, and we're getting rid of that term, any local government body.
Yes, Chair, that's the problem. So I'll have to just confer with the department, either municipality or leave out those words.
Okay. Technicality, but important ones so that we're consistent. Thanks for picking that up. Okay, can we then move over to the letter which Dr. Sefolaro was referring to, which is in front of me now. And Cuban maybe could help us with understanding.
Thank you, Chairperson. This relates to the medical scheme that's Transmed. It is made up of members of the company, which is Transnet, and in moving forward, there would be employees of the company moving into being employees of the corporation, that is the new body made up of SARCC and the like. And in order to facilitate a smooth movement of them moving over without a break in medical aid, because the medical aid as it is now is for employees of the company, to provide the mechanism for them to move over, there's a need for this amendment so that there is no break in medical aid.
they are happy with what's been proposed, and the Department of Transport is happy with what's been proposed.
Yes, Chair, we're happy as long as so that it can and move the process forward.
Good. Okay. Any Dr. Sipola?
Yeah, no, but why should it be our business to disestablish this dispensary by deleting subsections 3 and 4? If I'm reading you correctly, you want to remove that 3 and 4. 3 especially, which says the company shall establish a dispensary.
Okay, just
you go to 177 of the Principal Act.
Okay, just hold up. Let me get there. It takes a bit of time to find. So 177, page 177. Right.
I'm just saying this business of all the dispensary should be processed elsewhere. But it appears very opportunistic. For us to be requested to approve the disestablishment of the dispensary, or what is the intention here? But I thought we were merely asking that the members be transferred into this medical fund. They should not lose their protection and membership of the medical aid scheme.
Okay, I'm not following you completely. I'm sure. I'm looking at the Principal Act, which if I understand correctly, establishes Transmed as a pension, as a medical aid for this new entity, which was then set up then, a Transmed basically, as a legal successor to that. And it's established a pension fund, basically. So that's what a medical aid. Okay, so that's that. Then what we're trying to do now is allow people coming out of Transmed into this new entity to if they so choose, to be able to carry remain members of Transmed. That's what we're trying to do. And what's your problem?
In the Principal Act, originally, there's a provision for Transmed, but also 3 provides for the establishment and management of
where
the
dispensary. Where are we?
Page 177 of the Principal Act, Section 10.
Okay, I see what the problem is. I'm looking at there's 177 and there's a 177 brackets 1 and I've got...
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Okay,
so we're looking at...
1771.
177.1.
Yes, 177. Sorry, yeah.
Okay. And we're looking at? Section 10, subsection 3.
3, yes.
Yeah.
That's the first bit.
Right.
The letter requests that we amend the Principal Act by deleting 3 and 4. Now, 3, originally, was empowering the company to establish and manage dispensaries for the purposes of Transmed. Now, here, where we are just busy with the transfer of the company's operations, members, and assets, are now being asked to make a major change to the structure and services and operations of the medical aid itself by deleting this subsection 3 and 4. I'm saying, why should we be asked to do that?
Okay, take us through slowly. Let's start with the amendment that we are now wanting to introduce is what is in bold, am I right, in the letter that we're getting from Transmed? Or, sorry, where is the text? What text are we talking about?
Chair, the text is in the letter.
In the letter?
In the letter on page 2. And we would agree with the Honourable Member. Because close
page 2 or page 3?
Page 2. Chair, I've got 2 pages.
I've got 2 letters. Okay, it's getting very confusing. Okay, let me start. The 2 letters. Okay. Sorry. Letters. Okay, just bear with me. Okay, so page 2, right. Okay. Now I'm on the right.
Chair,
rather subsection, yes.
Subsection 2 of clause 10, we would agree with the honourable member in order for the, for what we intend passing this amendment for, is to ensure that the transaction takes place. There is a, there's an official of Transnet who is here, will be able to explain in much more detail the reasons for 3 and 4 being cleaned out. But I would imagine that it's also taking the opportunity to clean out that section, and maybe we can...
Okay, let's just hear slowly.
Okay, so,
okay, so we're looking at... I'm finally looking at the right letter.
Okay.
We're on page 2, and we say, amendment of section 10 of the Principal Act. Okay. Section 10 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection small 2. Okay. Okay, which allows for the old South African Railways and Harbours SIC Fund to continue in existence as the company. So it's like another, it's a sub-succession there,
yeah.
Okay? So we amend it by saying the South African Railways and Harbours SIC Fund constitutes in terms of regulations promulgated under section da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da shall be in existence as not the companies but a medical scheme under the name Transmed or such other name that the Board of Trustees of Transmed may adopt, provided that no new employer shall be able to participate in Transmed without the prior written approval of the company. Okay? So we knock out the companies because we're intending for it to be not just for the company but also for this new entity. Not necessarily the sole medical aid, but one potential medical aid for employees in this thing. Okay.
What is being referred here, because we're saying that the SIC fund is continuing to exist as a medical scheme,
yes.
But then run by the Board of Trustees.
Yes.
But then the participation of any other new employer, then the approval is expected from the company.
Yes.
Which company? I'm getting confused.
That's not Trans.
I'm getting confused because I thought there is Transmed as a medical aid scheme and it's run by the Board of Trustees and then the approval.
Board of Trustees of the medical scheme itself.
Yes, because I was expecting maybe that those Board of Trustees were the ones to approve any entrance of a new employer or what. I'm just trying to understand.
Yes, yes. In other words, part of this is the old act which we mentioned. So the old act said as whatever it was, SATS became Transnet, all of the people on that old SIC fund or whatever it was called now are entitled to become beneficiaries of Transnet. Okay. Any new employees being employed by Transnet could only join that medical aid with the written agreement of. So it wasn't automatic. So when you then became a new employee of Transnet, you would apply to join the medical aid. Okay? And what we're having to do is to make it possible for people who are not employees of Transnet to remain members of this medical aid. Okay, so we're knocking out the companies. Okay, but we still require written approval from the Board of Trustees of Transnet. In other words, they would have to apply as they get transferred across from Autopax and from Social Laws ML, they will apply. And the agreement, which is a outside of the legislative process, is that there will be an agreement to do so. That's part of the negotiated arrangement of the transfer as between the employers and the new employees. Okay? So that's pretty straightforward. And that you're not raising. It's the next issue that you're raising. Okay? So we're happy with A small 2, A, under the amendment as suggested by the letter.
And with the point that he made now,
yeah.
that last word company shall be Board of Trustees of Transnet to a red as per our understanding that the last word company will be substituted with Board of Trustees of Transnet. Transnet or the Board of Trustees of Transnet. So that we're only dealing with...
Okay, no, I can't do that. Okay, so let's hear the arguments and we'll hear an argument from Transnet as well. Okay.
Chair, if I'm guided by yourselves, are we referring to the last company in that proposed list? Okay. Chair, there's two issues here, and I think the one issue is that the written approval of Transmet or the Board of Trustees of Transmet is be the written approval of the company. And what I'm hearing from the members is that it should be the written approval of the medical aid. Yeah. Okay. But I think the purpose, and my explanation may not necessarily be on the button, but I'll attempt to. I think the issue, particularly as regard to this transaction, is that the employees who will be moving across are now employees of the company. And in order to know which members would be affected by this, the company would then would be the authority that would provide that information and give the written approval. Because at this point in time, that Transmet is a scheme for the company.
As you have said it before, because it looks like we are looking at the word company from different positions. It looks like what I'm understanding is that the company referred here is the company with the new employers to enter the scheme. Yes. That's exactly where I put the problem.
But in terms of the Principal Act, Chair, the definition of the company is Transnet. The other aspect that maybe that could shed some light is the issue of whether the intention is to open up Transnet to everybody. For instance, like a discovery. And I think that would then,
in order to facilitate the transfer of employees out of Transnet into the new corporation, from the company Transnet into the new corporation, one of the things that we must make sure, and we've done that previously with Metro Rail, perhaps in a different way, is to just make sure that employees don't lose their medical aid benefits. Okay. So how do we do it? Okay. And how we do it is we allow them to continue to be members of Transmet. Whether some subsequent set of policies and so on allow other employees of the new entity to also... I think that starts to get clumsy myself. I think that one needs to... That the new entity presumably has got its own arrangements by way of medical aid. Rail Commuter Corporation. Not everyone... in Rail Commuter Corporation has come across from Metro Rail and therefore is not covered by Transmet. And you've got your own medical aid arrangements. So any new employees would come in under that provision. But we're just safeguarding those who get transferred. So we're not just transferring assets and liabilities. There are also human beings involved and we don't want to disadvantage them. I mean, that's the point. And they're not compelled if they feel that their new medical aid would be more advantageous or whatever. So it's a choice as well. But the danger is that you undermine things that they've got already here, to which they've contributed over a long time and whatever. And you don't want it. So it's just trying to streamline that. Okay. So the first issue under A is where should the prior written approval come from? And I think it's correctly stated here in my view, but subject to people who know better than I do, that it should be a written agreement from Transnet. Transnet is the entity, basically, that has been running this medical aid. And as part of the negotiations, they're agreeing, in principle, to allow that to happen. And in law, we're creating the possibility for that to happen. And since it's coming from Transnet, we don't understand that there's any problem with it. They're also happy to facilitate that. And okay. Now, Dr. Sifalaris got an issue there. Yeah.
I'm not happy with that interpretation. You see, the proposal to remove as the company's medical scheme. We change as the company's medical scheme to a medical scheme. So we loosen Transnet, so that it's not strictly bound to Transnet, it's not strictly an in-house or in-company medical scheme. By so loosening it, we make it possible for somebody who moves over to the corporation to still belong to Transnet. But losing it in that manner, therefore, makes it it provides a service to both the corporation and the original members of Transnet. And that's why I agree with colleague with Honorable Mashila when he says, rather make it the business, give the authority to Transnet. Because now, you see, they say here existence as a medical scheme, not the company's medical scheme. I'd rather leave it at that, and I'm comfortable with that, because all the other intricacies of how it moves from becoming an in-house or in-company medical scheme to a slightly open, but not as open as Discovery medical scheme, those things are, I believe, don't belong here to us. It's just a slight opening, and that's why if you repeat the word company there, you bring it back to an in-company scheme. Whereas the A medical scheme, for me, would link up with us saying approval of the Board of Trustees or approval of Transnet. They're proposing that, and I agree with them. And I'm saying, I say we knock it out. I agree with them. I support the proposal from Transnet, but I'm saying the repetition of the word company there and where it is left is misplaced. It should not be there. It should be removed also and be replaced with Board of Trustees. Or even, because that's why the medical scheme now exists. Losing the bet from company.
Enterprise. I mean, the intention is not to now make Transnet a broad public sector medical aid or SOE medical aid, but it continues to be a Transnet medical aid service, but with some breathing space to allow former Transnet employees who come across in these transfers to continue to participate. That's the intention.
Can I clarify?
Yes.
And I'm speaking on behalf of Transnet here. Just to clarify, Transnet is a medical aid scheme. It is governed under the medical... I must just get the correct title of the, but it's the Medical Schemes Act. So in other words, the Medical Schemes Act has come in subsequent to the Legal Succession Act and in fact supersedes what stands in the Legal Succession Act in respect of medical aid schemes. So the proposed cleanup here is not to try to change anything that is in practice at the moment under the medical schemes legislation. It's simply to get rid of those provisions that are not in keeping with the Medical Schemes Act. The Transnet does not run dispensaries. This is very old legacy stuff that has come from the old Harbors Sick Fund and it simply does not apply anymore. So that was, you know, it was a recommendation to clean this up at the same time as providing that the Transmed scheme is available to other members. And Chairperson, just to clarify, Transnet has no financial interest in Transmed. Transmed is a standalone membership scheme. It so happens that most of the members are Transnet employees because of the history of what we have here. But in order to be sustainable as a medical aid scheme, what the Board of Trustees is saying is that they need to behave like any other medical aid scheme, and they need to be able to attract members as in any other medical aid scheme is able to attract members. And those parties who leave Transnet's employment should be allowed to continue as members of the medical aid scheme in whatever other employment they find, whether it's in the private sector or, in this case, moving across to SARCC. So the SARCC transaction has stimulated us to look at these provisions and say, is this not an opportunity for us to clean up some of the slightly messy inheritance that we've got here and allow Transmed to get on with its job as a medical aid scheme and provide the services to members. The insert about the company approving a new employer was really to try to protect our existing members, because as soon as you have a new employer bringing in new members, it can change the rates that our staff will be paying for their medical aid provisions. And I guess it was a protection mechanism on our part to try to protect the interests of our members in what might be a major transaction that would maybe change the fees that they pay. But that was really the only intent behind that insertion. I hope that's helped to clarify, Chair.
Yes, it does a bit. You understand what's happening, Betty? Yes. Now I also understand better now what's happening. In a sense, you're asking us to clean up some of the Transnet side of it. What we're trying to do is try to make provision for the people who are coming across, and to make sure they don't lose benefits. What you're trying, you're using the opportunity now also to clean up some things with Transnet, to position Transnet to do things. Now, that's fine, that's okay, but it's another ball that we're juggling with. So, I mean, I welcome your input, but it's also a little bit why we're all battling to quite understand what we're trying to do.
Chairperson, just to clarify, I think we also felt a bit of discomfort about this because we knew it was only partly in the territory of what you were dealing with. And in our initial letter, where we had raised the issues about the asset transfers and the liabilities, we said there are these other matters about Transmed that we'd like to bring to your attention. They would facilitate the transfer of these employees, but we'd seek your guidance as to how to go about recommending some amendments in this regard.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to stand in the way of helping things, clearly, and we're not just in the business of looking after the thing. I'm a little bit worried that we're sort of treading into an area that, you know, we haven't familiarized ourselves properly with. So, I mean, you're giving us just a kind of sketchy outline of where Transmed wants to go, and it wants to broaden its base and so on. So, I mean, it sounds fine, but I'm just a little bit nervous about wading in there without getting Transmed in and hearing and getting Transmed in and getting and having a fairly substantial thing. And Dr. Cifilaro?
So are we discussing this again tomorrow with the hope to finalize it? Because I'm just checking with members of the ANC whether we shouldn't have enough time to reflect on this.
Tomorrow we're looking at the National Land Transport Bill, and then we thought we'd come back to this next week. Okay. No. In other words, we're looking. I'm not sure if we're not going to run out of time, but we'll look at a finalization next week. Okay. Is that impossible?
No, Chair. That would be better because this bill, my colleague from Parliament can just say they agree, but this bill hasn't been tagged yet by the joint tagging mechanism, so there's a rule there, so we have to wait for that
not even succeed next week. In other words, if I'm hearing tagging issues and so on. But let's, from our point of view, try and aim for that. But let's, because we're anxious to really under a lot of pressure, and we put ourselves deliberately under pressure to process as much legislation as possible. But I think what's desirable is to take, even if we don't make it next week, is to be well poised, so that we can, you know. So let's spend a little bit more time. I know you're wanting to pick for touch maybe a little bit, but let's just kind of be well poised, so that when next time we meet on the matter, we it's not going to take us, you know, we can move quite quickly. Okay.
Well, thanks, yeah. And then I won't kick it into dust. No. I think after that explanation, I feel more correct and honourable Mashila's point that you shouldn't use this process and opportunity to protect what you say now is a Transnet that is actually on its own. Governed by the Medical Schemes Act. I sympathize with this intention and desire to clean up the Act, the principal Act. But I insist we mustn't try and deal with the interest and protection and viability, sustainability of Transnet here. And if that word company there was intended to achieve that, I think it is a misplaced process. And all other matters that have to that intend to clean up the Act, like B and D, because D also intends to deal with a whole lot of things that are really about the cleaning up 7 to 10 to 12. About just cleaning up the Act and so on. All of those things, I think, don't belong here, because they're going to require that we talk to the Portfolio Committee on Health, we get to public enterprises, we get the Medical Schemes Council in and so on. It's actually going to frustrate or delay this process. So let's rather stay clear of areas that will draw in other authorities and interest groups and achieve what we want to achieve, the transfer of the public, long public, what we said we wanted to transfer, including the people. Let's deal with their interests, protect their membership of Transnet as they move across. And we can assist you later in dealing with this, but I see a risk if we're going to insert these extraneous and external interest groups and authorities into this process. Thanks.
Thanks. I see lots of nodding from. Yeah, I think we agree. Lemmy?
Yeah, Chair, the other thing, of course, what I was just reading here is that this particular amendment also, it was not creating space for the new entity, if it has got any viable medical aid scheme, that these people then will be at liberty to actually move from Transnet to the new one. This particular clause, this amendment, it looks like it's almost closing up on the current membership that are being transferred. And I think it will be too much limiting. One would have expected an amendment which guarantees the existence of this particular medical aid scheme, but also opening up, you know, that if the people are interested to join the new medical aid scheme of the new company that they are joining, then it should be possible. But currently, it is not.
Okay, let's hear how the Metro Rail transfer went, and whether we needed to. I don't remember writing anything into legislation, but maybe I've forgotten. Yeah, that had to do with the medical aid.
Metro Rail arrangement, the sale of business agreement made provision that Metro Rail employees can retain their membership in the Transnet, but also they can join the SRCC medical aid scheme that were available. There was no protectionism.
We're coming there. They negotiate, in other words, and the parties agree to. Let's hear, Sue.
The difficulty, Chairperson, is that the Act actually doesn't allow persons who are not employed by the company, Transnet, to remain members of Transnet. So even though that agreement was reached, the Act says differently.
Agreed. So we do need to legislate for the benefit of the Metrorail people, retrospectively as much as for the prospective transferees. Yeah? So there's an agreement that we do need to, it can't just be a business arrangement, it needs to be legislated. Now how do we legislate with a light touch? Because I think what my fellow members are saying is that, I think you're hearing it from the Transnet, like we, you know, it's something that should be driven by the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee, probably working closely with health and others. And you know, if it needs cleaning up, it probably needs a proper, comprehensive looking at. Okay. Now, okay. 2 minutes about to solve all our problems. Yeah.
Chair, considering the short time frame that we have in this year, in terms of legislation in particular, would it not be possible then, by your guidance and the guidance of the committee, just to address the issue of Section 10, Subsection 2, as opposed to the other issues as suggested earlier?
Here, in the current letter version of it, this bill, do you think that's adequate, or do you think, because Dr. Sefolaro, amongst others, has raised some uncertainties about it?
Chair, what we clear up is the issue of the company at the end of that subsection, as suggested, and we would try and get clarity on that issue. And the separate process be embarked upon by DPE to clean up the rest of the issues as it relates to this.
Okay, you're taking for touch, in others.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the right thing to do. Okay. But let's try and work out what is it that we are, without necessarily, I favor that, so in other words, because all parties are anxious for the thing to move forward, so at least we're not stuck with that problem. Everyone, all of the key bodies want us to proceed, and as quickly as possible, for differing reasons. Transnet would like to get the hell out of water bags and social of the mail. We're anxious to set up an effective new entity, okay? So I'm happy, therefore, to not to be over-directed here and in a bit of an ad hoc way. So can we say that you will come, yeah. What we want is legislation that just enables us to help the transfer of the people. They won't be compromised in terms of lots of things. And maybe we just need to think about the Metrorail people as well, just so that you find wording that isn't specifically about Autopax and Chaussel of the Mail, but former employees of the company have the right to remain on, and what would be required by way of permission or special agreement or whatever, whether from the company or not. I mean, I can hear that argument, by the way, that the company might want to be able to sign off on that, and I think that could be a legitimate concern. Lemmy?
Yeah, so one would actually like to see a situation where this Transnet continues to exist, that the people can continue to benefit from it, not to be compromised, one. And then two, also the clause should allow for these people to cross to whatever the new medical aid scheme that is being established by the new company. And then, Yeah, so that we don't tie the new company to the old thing that they can't get out of it. And I think that is the kind of a clause that I would like to see. Sir.
I think the core function of this new entity is rail, and just to complement the rail aspect of the transaction is Autopex, the bulk of it. Just an explanation in terms of those 1,422 buses. Chair, 926 of those are standard commuter buses, which the intention is to dispose of to the metros and the networks. The bulk of them would be there. The semi-luxury buses and the luxury buses would be with Autopex in terms of complementing the social loads of mail service, but also to provide services in rural areas. And I think one of the issues that we need to address on the luxury bus side is that it has compartments which would normally be luggage compartment, but which could be converted for small freight to and from rural areas and so on. But, I mean, those are issues that the strategy and business plan would need to address. But also, what it would do is it would assist Autopex from losing those full maintenance leases, which currently cost quite a lot in servicing those full maintenance leases. And as a result of those full maintenance, currently Autopex has full maintenance leases for much of their vehicle. Okay. And the deployment of buses to Autopex for the current services that they provide would make them less susceptible to high maintenance, full maintenance lease options, because they already have the vehicle and that would just reduce the current operating costs. Oh, sorry, Chair, that was the issue you asked about the buses. But the issue.
I think we can get into a whole waste of time about trying to rename and rebrand and whatever, but are there potential problems if it starts to be called something that doesn't have rail in it? Regulatory or legal?
No, from a regulation.
I think there's a view, yeah?
We had a situation where we were running trains were essentially running empty, where the path was more suited to bus transportation as opposed to rail. Essentially, we saw the declining usage of rail in that particular corridor over many years, where it was costing Shosholoza made about 106,000 to run a train each way, and the revenue there was about 4,000 because of the business that we had lost to the taxis, and also it takes a train about 9 hours to travel from Mafikeng to Kimberley, and we are saying to the provinces at the time that this is more suited. We could deploy two Autopex buses there to ferry people between the two centres. So it's one of those things where even as SLCC, there are instances where we favour road-based solution as opposed to rail. I'm sure that the same can be said about what's happening in the Eastern Cape with the K-Rail, but that's another issue for another day. But those are the things that, as authority, we do come by on day-to-day basis.
In terms of changing the name from what you've got here, it's not a profound resistance. You're just not doing it, yeah?
Rail is still our core business, to be supported by buses where we cannot deploy rail.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a strong feeling about it, but...
You probably use that rail and commuter, that and the SRCC remains.
Okay. London Underground isn't all underground, so the new rail thing doesn't have to just be rail. And clearly, I mean, what we do, I mean, it's less about the name. We really favour multimodal thinking. I mean, that's the right way to go, absolutely, and that's strong. And that's fine. Okay.
Chair, I think it's the name as it stands at the moment is misleading. It's misleading, this one of rail, passenger rail stages. But the other thing is that we suggested that this particular new agency should be at liberty to provide bus services where we don't have those services. And hence, the name should definitely properly reflect its operations, irrespective of taking one over the other, road and rail over the other, from, like as you have indicated, in terms of geographical locations, these things are changing. But we don't need to have it misleading. And the other fact that I just wanted to raise, Chair, was the intention of the department that certain buses will be sold out or given out to others. I mean, that may be the business plan now, but I mean, when the company has taken over those buses, surely they are at liberty, board of directors, whatever, they may be at liberty to decide otherwise if they find that there is serious business of those particular buses within themselves. And we can't expect them just to get rid of the buses because the business plan says so when conditions have changed. I think that operational flexibility needs to be sustained, and hence we must continue to apply our minds on this name and make sure that we have got a less misleading name. Thanks.
Highly misleading, because the core function will be the current Metro Rail services, Shoshalo de Mel, and then a whole lot of buses for 2010, but quickly buses really which are filling in where rail system is no longer the appropriate one, or where feeders to the rail system or something else required. Okay. The main thing is what you're doing and not what you're called, actually. Okay. Can we leave it on that note then? Anything further? So we'll... What are we saying? We're saying... Have we scheduled for next? No, we haven't actually scheduled to connect up next week. I think we were worried about the parliamentary processes. Not our processes, but... It's finally been referred... So what we've been dealing with has now finally this morning been referred to Parliament. To the committee. So that's okay. If from the side of the department specifically and state law advisors, but obviously with further negotiations with other interested parties, if we can accommodate you next week, if we're looking at a half an hour process or, you know, a 45 minute process, and we're keen to do that. So there needs to be obviously a printed version and things like that so that we can sign off on it properly. I'm not sure whether we'll get National Assembly time next week, but we can maybe also ask for that. Let's actually begin to apply for that too, in the hope that on... we're running it. Do you think Tuesday is possible? In other words, a week's time? Possible?
Yes, Jeff, from getting a draft before the committee, I'm just not sure whether the other process of Parliament will be run by then, but from our side, we'll be able to produce a draft.
Okay. So let's try on Tuesday morning to add this then. Lemon?
Yeah, Chair, I think I may just request if they can also go through the Principal Act and do some cleaning. Because I think we have deleted Section 15, but Section 17 of the Principal Act still makes reference to Section 15 and the rest. and if the doctor can do those kind of clinics. Thanks.
We did ask, yeah. Just think about that. I particularly don't want to go into a major amendments of the Principal Act that aren't helpful to what we're supposed to do. But if there's some consequential things that need to be looked at. So we'll try then to aim for Tuesday morning, and we'll try to book a session on, say, Thursday afternoon or whatever in the National Assembly to take it into there. That might all be overambitious. So we just need to stay in touch, committee secretary in particular, and then our various colleagues from different quarters of things. So we'll try to do that, but we can't promise absolutely that particularly with parliamentary time we might find that we haven't got it. Okay, because next week is our last week, and then we lose 4 weeks. And then there's NCOP as well. Although this is a section 75. But still there. But it shouldn't be too long in the NCOP. But they're under pressure as well. Okay. So we'll see each other tomorrow, many of us. We're dealing with the first orientation on the National Land Transport Bill, which is also now being brought to Parliament. Table to the committee. Thanks very much.
Thank you.